Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church, and you are listening to the 50,000 watt AM 670 KLTT. I will be heading to Jackson, Mississippi this weekend for the start of Operation Save America's week-long effort to close down the last abortion clinic in the state of Mississippi. It's called Jackson Women's Health Organization. You will recall, we talked about this at the time, that Frontline aired a PBS TV special titled The Last Abortion Clinic, lamenting the pro-life efforts to stop abortion in this Bible Belt state. Well, during that program, Frontline interviewed Terry Herring, then president of Pro-Life Mississippi, which group, PBS said, that Pro-Life Mississippi helped to close down five abortion clinics in Mississippi. Wow. Five abortion clinics closed down and now one to go. That's good work. Let me read from the transcript of that documentary, The Last Abortion Clinic. Pro-Life Mississippi's current target is the state's last abortion clinic, the Jackson Women's Health Organization. And then you hear Terry Harding speaking about protesters who go to that last abortion clinic. She says, people are faithful to be there when the doors are open, and it makes it very uncomfortable, Terry Herring tells Frontline. And I think it should be uncomfortable to go in some place and kill your unborn baby. Herring says the pro-life movement needs to make abortion socially unacceptable. It's not okay for a black person to drink at a different water fountain. It's not okay to go to the back of the bus. Well, it's not okay to kill unborn babies. It's just not okay. Terry Herring, welcome to Bob Enyart Live.
Hi, good to be here.
Thanks so much for joining us, and thank you for fighting to end child killing in Mississippi. We appreciate that.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Terry, last year, Flip Benham and Operation Save America were in our backyard for a week here in Denver. And this year, they're in your backyard. So can we begin with a bit of a history of the battle to stop abortion in Mississippi so we have some context for OSA's event this week?
Well, you know, at one time, there were seven abortion clinics in Mississippi. So there were a few on the coast. I think there was one up north and a couple in Jackson. So over the years, I think it's been important in Mississippi that we've had people that have been very diligent to be at the clinic counseling regularly. So we're excited about Operation Save America coming to Jackson and for the nation to focus for a moment on one abortion clinic in Jackson, with our hopes being, of course, that it would close down soon.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you say counsel, not everyone in our audience will know what you mean when Christians go to an abortion clinic to counsel. Terry, can you explain that?
Well, I think that, you know, most of the time, by the time a woman gets to the abortion clinic, by the way, Mississippi has a 24-hour waiting period, which has been very helpful in helping reduce abortion here because it gives counselors at the clinic, we call them sidewalk counselors, because we can't get a woman who's seeking an abortion to come to a counseling office and have a good conversation with them. So we are forced by circumstance to be on the sidewalk saying, will you please talk to us about this pregnancy? We can help you. So we have people who are out asking these women to reconsider their decision, giving them information about the alternatives to abortion and the consequences of abortion, mentally, spiritually, physically. And so often we are able to detour up to 100 women a year from having an abortion by being at the abortion clinic.
Mm. And that's exciting. Here in Denver, Colorado, we call them saves, and we make a distinction between a save and a confirmed save. And that's when we actually speak to the mom and she confirms that she has changed her mind. This happens at the abortion clinic. And then once a year, Colorado Right to Life has their annual march, and we announce the number of babies saved that year and release pink and blue helium balloons into the sky. And usually it's about 100 babies a year that are saved, mostly from one abortion clinic, a Planned Parenthood, downtown Denver. But so you have a similar experience right there in Jackson.
Well, and then what a great idea to make a very positive statement about, you know, each balloon representing a life. And I'm sure you know, a lot of times it's hard to keep statistics at the clinic.
It sure
we
is.
We have several
right.
different people that are going there, and, you know, so, you know, sometimes, obviously, a woman is turned away, and we don't know, but we know she didn't get an abortion that day.
Right.
And we haven't seen her back. So oftentimes, there's not an ongoing relationship with these women mm-hmm. unless they choose, you know, to follow up. Mm-hmm. And in that case, we have the opportunity of sometimes, you know, getting to meet the born child, which is, you know, obviously a wonderful thing to actually tangibly see. But, you know, Bob, you're pastoring, you know that the abortion issue we have to operate by faith. I was just speaking with someone today, and I said, you know, if we don't believe we can end abortion, then we're not operating through the kingdom of God. So somewhere, even though abortion has been legal for 33 years, we have to believe that not only can our national laws be changed, but the hearts and minds of the people can be changed. And so that's why we press on.
Yeah, back when slavery was legal in America, I read a long time ago a senator's wife, a quote she gave, that she said, slavery is the greatest evil in the world except for abolition. And so what she was saying is, hey, I'll agree that slavery is bad, but let's not really think we're going to stop it. People seem to come up with excuses for why they just would rather be apathetic and not care about children being killed in our cities in America. But as it turns out, we were able to stop slavery, although it was a horrendous period of our history. And eventually, abortion, the killing of unborn children, will end eventually. The question is, if we'll be true to God, to love our neighbor, and do what we can to stop it sooner rather than later, so that fewer women will have to become murderers of their own kids, and fewer kids will have their lives snuffed out.
Without question. And, you know, I think when they were trying to confirm in through the Senate hearings the new Supreme Court justices, I remember Arlen Specter saying, we have come to rely on Roe. I mean, I could just hear his voice and see his face. And I'm thinking, oh, that is so good. You are so right. So the very thing that we're dealing with in America is a stronghold where in people's hearts and minds, even if they will agree that abortion is wrong, they can't see us living without abortion. I like to remind people that, you know, though there has always been some type of infanticide, abortion as we know it is only 33 years old. Women have lived without abortion, you know, throughout time, throughout history. Mm-hmm. Women have dealt with, quote, unplanned pregnancies. We can do this. So I like to challenge people in America to say, the American women, a nation that is the wealthiest nation on earth, we can handle unplanned pregnancies. You know, there is absolutely no reason to feel that we cannot live without Roe. Mm. But we have to reach the public heart with that. And
yeah. Well, that's true. And the battle is fought the same way you evangelize. At every front, at every opportunity, wherever we have resources and opportunity, we should use them to tell people there is a God. There's a God of love who will forgive you of your sins if you trust in Jesus Christ. And by the way, it's wrong to steal. It's wrong to murder. It's wrong to kidnap. And we need to love our neighbor and not legitimize killing children. So that's part of the battle. Now, Operation Save America, led by the Reverend Flip Benham, is coming to Jackson, Mississippi for a week. And I wanted to ask you, Terry, if if you know much about their plans. I myself, I'm planning to come down with some of the people from Denver Bible Church. We'll be there on Monday and stay for most of the week. But what have you heard about OSA coming to Jackson?
We've got things scheduled for the entire week through Operation Save America. Priests for Life are also going to be here. And Crossroads Kids, which is a group of young people who are walking across the United States, just wearing pro-life T-shirts and proclaiming the word of life, so to speak. We have a lot of action going on this weekend, and that's awesome.
Yeah, now, you are a past president of Pro-Life Mississippi, and right on their homepage, prolifemississippi.org, they have a schedule of the week's events with OSA and what's going on. It looks like there will be a lot of protest at that last abortion clinic and at the Capitol building. So it'll be a week of trying to save lives and trying to encourage the government to stop this legitimized child killing.
Well, you know, early on in the movement, and I've been involved for over 20 years now, I remember a phrase that kind of stuck with me. And it's simply this: social change does not come without upheaval. And I think, you know, a lot of people fear the upheaval, so to speak. But any time you have groups of people who are willing to risk the heat in July in Mississippi,
yeah,
willing
right.
to risk their reputation, willing to stand for life, it speaks to the nation that this is unacceptable.
Mm.
And I think, God forbid, that no one is at that abortion clinic. I've been interviewed this last year by people from all over the world. It has been so interesting to me to see that right here in Mississippi, where we wanted to affect the state, we were eventually able to affect the nation,
mm-hmm.
and that drew the world. And you know what one of the reporters said to me? She said, of course the rest of the world is interested in what America does about abortion, because what America does will affect the rest of the world.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my paradigm changed through this interaction. But one of the ladies that I interviewed with was from France, and we were emailing prior to her coming. And I said, do you have people at your clinics? And she said, no, but in France, get this, listeners, in France, you cannot have an abortion past 10 weeks. This is liberal France, godless nation,
mm-hmm.
okay?
Right.
Supposedly can't have, absolutely forbidden past 10 weeks. So, you know, interesting coming from this reporter that she told me that, but no one is at their clinics. And so they have acquiesced, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
in that nation that, of course, you know.
Well, Europe is basically post-Christian. We lament how carnal and how worldly our culture in America has become, but compared to Europe, America is filled with nothing but Puritan fundamentalist Christians. Europe is really far gone.
Yeah, they're far gone, but they're stopping abortions at 10 weeks.
Well, in France,
the scary thing is that we claim, as a Christian nation, and
yeah.
I agree with you that you know, we are far from where we need to be,
right,
as far
sure.
as living up to the Christian nation reputation. But to actually look at how liberal, it just was another affirmation to me of just how out of control the abortion issue is in the U.S.
Well, yeah, and we need to lead the battle for the world, not only for America. We talk about over a million abortions a year, but that's only in America. If you look at the world, it's more like 45 million children killed every year, almost a million babies a week killed around the world. So when we fight this battle, we're fighting it for much of mankind.
Well, and another thought, I was reading something recently about Canada. Do you know that Canada's Supreme Court just in 1998 struck their abortion laws? I mean, you know, from 73 to 98 was a long way. So, again, we look at Canada as being more liberal, but we have got a long ways to go to reverse Roe in the U.S. But it will have an effect on the rest of the world. And as they said on that PBS special, which is one of my favorite parts, is the abortion clinic worker who says, you know, they're smart and they're winning the battle. And I think, you know, it's not so much, I think, that obviously we have a long ways to go to actually win this battle for the hearts and minds of the people, but that we are making progress. They're starting to hear us. And that's the beginning. Well, you know, you can't share the gospel if someone won't listen.
Well, Terry,
you can't talk about the sanctity of human life unless you can get people to listen. Mm-hmm. And I think we're starting to get people to listen.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Terry Herring, past president of Pro-Life Mississippi and involved with the battle for a couple decades now in that state to stop abortion. And there is a last abortion clinic in Jackson that Operation Save America will be targeting this very week upcoming. Terry, I wanted to have a bit of a heart-to-heart talk with you about pro-life strategy. And if we could almost forget that we're on the radio.
Okay.
And just talk. We've been in this battle for many years. I got into, Colorado Right to Life in the late 80s. And Operation Rescue, you're familiar with,
of course,
with Operation Rescue. And so I've been involved for almost 20 years, a couple years, maybe 18 years. And there have been changes during that time. And I wanted to ask you about some of the basics of the pro-life battle. You mentioned the waiting period that's in Mississippi. We don't have a waiting period like that here in Colorado. And still at this one abortion clinic, the pro-lifers, and sometimes there's only three or four, other on Saturdays maybe there's 10 to 20.
Right.
But we still have over 100 babies saved every year at that one Planned Parenthood abortion clinic. But you're familiar with the concept of the laws around the country, like in Texas, they have their parental notification law. And you're familiar with that, right?
Yes.
Well, I wanted to ask you, we looked into their judicial bypass, and Justice Priscilla Owen is a favorite of the pro-life community, and she was a Texas Supreme Court justice, and George W. Bush nominated her for a federal position, and she was finally confirmed, so she's now a federal judge. And 10 moms came to the Texas Supreme Court for permission to have abortions that they didn't want to tell their parents. And so it was based on this parental notification and judicial bypass. And the first 9 moms, Priscilla Owen was not involved in the decision, or she opposed the decision to kill any of those 9 babies. But I wanted to ask you about baby 10. And first of all, have you heard about baby 10 in Texas?
No, I have not heard this.
Okay, well, baby 10 came, the mother of baby 10, came before the Texas Supreme Court.
A minor under 18.
Right, asking for permission to kill her baby. She didn't want to tell her parents. And they have a law passed, you know, pro-lifers passed the parental notification law in Texas. And they said, now a minor cannot have an abortion, can't kill her child unless she notifies her parents. But there is a judicial bypass, so she could go to the courts. And if she goes to the court has to rule in a 10-day period. If they don't rule in a certain period, then she gets to have her abortion. And so the lower court judge missed the deadline for the filing in this one baby 10's case. And so that went up to Priscilla Owen. And Priscilla Owen looked at the law, passed, you know, mostly by pro-lifers, and she said, well, the law is clear. The lower court judge missed the deadline for filing for this case, for this mother. And so she signed the ruling giving permission to kill baby 10. And we have we've tried to get the pro-life community around the country to consider the case of baby 10. And for the most part, people are not interested in talking through that, through this one particular baby's case. But I wanted to ask you, I realize you told us you haven't heard of baby 10, which shows in part that we haven't done a good job, but what is your take on that? when a pro-life conservative Christian justice says, well, the law says that if the deadline is missed, we have to rule to give the mother permission to have an abortion. So Priscilla Owen signed the ruling that would kill baby 10. What's your take on that situation?
Well, you know, we live in a nation of laws. Whether we like it or not, I think that she was bound by law. But this is the thing about law. I mean, if I was her personally, I obviously would not have, you know, given permission, because I believe that makes you guilty of shedding innocent blood.
Right, exactly.
But on the parental consent law and all of these, I think this is the hardest thing that pro-life people deal with. But I think because I know that God called me to do this, I can see clearly the moral groundwork for what I do. And we also have a parental consent law. That was the first law that I lobbied for. We're one of the few states that requires both parents to give written consent. And the reason we did that is we didn't want a divorced parent to be able to take the daughter without telling the parent that maybe she was living with.
Well, Terry, I want to focus now on your comments. You said if you were the judge, you would have not signed that, basically, that.
But the thing is, she still followed the law. And see, that is why, you know, we don't live in a place where there's options on following the law. And I think that's one thing. And I'm not making excuses for Priscilla Owen. I would have,
Terry, why are you saying you wouldn't? Because if you did, you'd be guilty of shedding innocent blood.
Because that she made the wrong decision in that case. But what I'm saying to you is that even with the judicial bypass, we have a judicial bypass. We had to have a judicial bypass. And I think one thing that we have to look at is, are we willing to chip away, which if you look at the women's right to vote or the civil rights issue, we ended slavery.
Oh, yeah, incrementalism is great.
It has to happen,
Terry,
incrementally.
Yeah, you do everything you can. If you could only save one child out of 100 that are going to be killed, you save that one.
Right, and we don't compromise on our message.
And in Wichita, Kansas, I don't know if you heard the story, there were two abortion clinics. The pro-lifers there, Operation Rescue, bought the facility that the one clinic was operating in, the building, and they closed down the business because that abortion clinic was struggling. And so literally in the last few weeks, the second abortion clinic in Wichita was closed by pro-lifers. So that's incrementalism.
Right.
But I want to ask you a couple questions then on these principles. After World War II, there were German judges who were against the killing of the Jews, but they went ahead and ruled to kill particular Jews, sort of like Priscilla Owen killed baby 10. And there was one German judge who said he was against the Holocaust, but he signed the order to kill Marcus Luftgas, a particular Jewish man, for hoarding eggs. And we went in with the Nuremberg trials, and we tried judges and lawyers and governing officials for murder, and when they said their defense was they were following the law, we told them that that was not a defense, because when a judge murders the innocent, that judge is guilty. He's guilty before God, before man. So I want to ask you, were we wrong? Were the Nuremberg trials wrong after World War II when we said to German judges and officials that there is no legal justification for killing innocent people? Was America wrong for taking that moral stand?
I believe that there's a higher law, you know, that we would have to follow individually. I think there's a responsibility, obviously, even though we support parental consent in lieu of abortion on demand without parental consent, we certainly are not saying that if you have your parents' consent, it's okay. And I think that's where some people, you know, kind of have a problem. They're like, well, we're agreeing that if they have their parents' consent, it's okay.
Terry, maybe we could separate the issues for a moment, because we're so involved in the day-to-day fight, sometimes we tend to gloss over the principles. But with this, a German judge, if a German judge was following the law and precedent that democratically elected Adolf Hitler, and he said, I'm against this, but I'm a judge and I have to uphold the law. And so shouldn't we tell him, if you rule to kill that Jewish man, Marcus Lufgas, you are wrong. There is no legitimate justification. And in fact, you share in the guilt of murder. Shouldn't we have told that judge that?
I agree with that consensus,
okay.
Yes.
Now, how about Priscilla Owen with baby 10?
I think she made a moral judgment that she will be held responsible for before God.
I think you're right, Terry. And here's what we have to do. Terry Herring with the Pro-Lifers in Mississippi and Bob Inyart with the Pro-Lifers in Colorado, we have to somehow stop the slide of the pro-life community's moral principles, because we have been raising this issue of baby 10, and pro-life group after group after group, leaders, national leaders, have been saying that Priscilla Owen was right in issuing that ruling because she was following the law. And that's sort of how you answered at first.
Well, and I don't think that she was right, because it was an unrighteous decision.
Yeah, it was the murder of a child.
In accordance to the law.
If the Supreme Court says you could murder Jews, well, then that decision of the Supreme Court it lacks legal authority. And so every lower court who says, well, I'm going to rubber stamp the killing of Jews because that's what the Supreme Court did, what they're doing is unlawful, it's immoral, it's inhuman, and it's godless.
Well, and at some point, though, does this not tell us that at this point in our history, we have not educated or won the hearts and minds of the people?
Well, that's true.
To the fact that the unborn child is a person.
Right. Terry Herring, I hope to see you when I come down there.
I would love to meet you.
All right. I know I'll be at the abortion clinic and at the OSA events all next week. So God bless you. Thank you so very much.
Thank you, Bob.
For joining us. Now, Terry has a website that's going up, and it's called terryherring.com. And when I'm down there, I'll see if Terry would like to follow up on our discussion about baby 10. And then what does it mean that almost the entire pro-life community has changed positions? 60 years ago in America, we thought a judge who ruled to kill the innocent was guilty. And today it's our pro-life leaders who are either equivocating or outright defending rulings to kill unborn children. Hey, actually, we're not going to go anywhere. We're going to continue this program, so we will be right back. Welcome back to Bob Inyart Live. Our phone number, 1-800-8-INYART. Now, let's go to the phones. We have a group of Christians from Denver on their way to Jackson, Mississippi, and I wanted to get an update from the road. And I believe we have Stephen Sutherland on the line. Stephen, how are you?
Bob, how are you?
Hello, I'm doing really well. Where are you guys at right now?
We are about 4 miles outside of Jackson, Mississippi.
All right, you're almost there. Has it gotten any warmer since you've been driving?
It's gotten quite a bit warmer since we left Denver, yeah, and the humidity is also pretty noticeable.
Yeah, now Denver here, we're a mile high, and it's always dry, very little humidity. So hot and humid, but it's worth it to go there because of the goal, which is the attempt to close down the last abortion clinic in Mississippi.
Oh, absolutely.
Amen. So, Stephen, who's driving the van?
Right now, Ken Scott is at the wheel.
Denver Bible Church's own Ken Scott. So you guys must be having a wonderful time, I'd imagine.
Oh, absolutely. On the road, actually, we visited several abortion clinics already to help out the local saints who are there protesting.
Well, let's start. You left Denver, and your first stop was what city?
The first stop we made, I believe, was in Wichita.
Wichita, Kansas. Now, that's right where they just had the big event where Operation Rescue purchased that abortion clinic and closed them down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You were there for what part of that?
We were there, actually, when they opened it up for the press to have several newspapers and TV stations in Wichita take a tour of it, and then we also went through it afterwards.
Wow, and so you got to go into the abortion clinic that was closed down now by the pro-lifers. What was it like?
It was an amazing experience. It was kind of surreal, actually, to go into a place where you know the kind of things that went on there, where they actually killed children, and to stand in the same room where the man who calls himself a doctor at least performed these crimes, really. It was like standing in a crime scene to look around and see what had gone on
in
there.
Wow. What was the place like?
It was unclean. It was had apparently unsafe and illegal wiring and plumbing. It was overall, someone described it as appalling. There were even, if you looked around, you could see dead cockroaches in some of the rooms.
That's supposedly a medical facility, but an abortion clinic is not a medical facility. It's a Right, it's a child-killing facility. We call them mills. Instead of a clinic, we call it an abortion mill or an abortuary.
Right.
Wow. All right, so then, in fact, you know what? I'm going to ask my call screener, let's get Keith Mason on the line so we could talk to Keith with Operation Rescue next. But right there in Wichita. But okay, so Stephen Sutherland, you guys left from Denver, headed to Wichita. You were there for the grand opening and the media coming into that abortion clinic that was shut down by the Christian pro-lifers there. So then what was next on your trip down to Jackson?
The next city that we visited was Little Rock, Arkansas.
Ah, we've been there before.
Yes, we have.
Not only for the Clinton Library opening, but also there is an abortion clinic there that's one of the, maybe only a couple in the whole state of Arkansas.
Mm-hmm. I think there may only be two or three.
Right, and so did you guys go to that abortion clinic?
Yeah, we did for two, maybe 3 hours there.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually, we caused quite a stir there. By the end of it, we probably had 7 police officers there making sure that we peaceful Christians weren't committing any crimes while just a little ways away, children were being scheduled to be murdered.
Right, exactly. So the government makes sure that the child killing goes on with minimal disruption. Stephen, when you were there, I guess when the police come, it adds to the circus-like atmosphere of the abortion clinic. And we know that many women don't even, if they're going to kill their baby and they see that, some of them turn away. They don't even drive up and go in because it's too embarrassing.
Right. Sometimes people will try to call the police on us to intimidate us or harass us, but really it creates a much more embarrassing scene for the clinic, or for the mill, rather,
right,
itself and the people going in.
All right. Okay, and so from Little Rock, now you're at Jackson, Mississippi.
That's right.
All right. Well, another group of us will be driving down this weekend, and we hope to see you guys there on Monday.
Yeah, we're definitely looking forward to seeing you here.
All right. Okay, well, please say hello to everybody for us at Denver Bible Church.
I'll do that for sure.
All right. God bless you, Stephen. Thank you.
You too, Bob.
Bye-bye. Now, that's Stephen Sutherland, one of the guys at Denver Bible Church. How old is Stephen? He's 16 years old. He's a homeschool guy, just absolutely wonderful guy from a great family. Now let's go to Wichita to Keith Mason with Operation Rescue. Keith, welcome back to Bob and Your Live.
Hey, Bob, it's so great to be back on. Twice in 1 month. I'm honored.
Yeah, thank you very much. We just got a report from Stephen Sutherland on his way to Jackson, Mississippi with OSA, and he said he was in Wichita for the grand opening and actually walked into that abortion clinic that you guys closed down.
And yeah, it was an incredible honor to have Stephen down there. He came down with Ken Scott and Cliff Powell from Colorado,
mm-hmm.
and it really made me homesick for Colorado and the Bible Church.
Well, we're hoping you and Jennifer, your wife, one of these years end up back here. Of course, we'd love that. But so, Keith, Tell us about the grand opening. You had been on and told us that the pro-lifers purchased the building that this abortion clinic was operating in when you found out that the clinic was having difficulties. You purchased the building and you basically foreclosed or closed down the clinic, and now that's out of business permanently. And so tell us about the grand opening and the media coming by.
Yesterday was the first day that we've opened the clinic to the public. We've had just a handful of Christians come through the clinic and just really look and see what the conditions in there were like. And it is horrific to be in there and to be in a place where thousands of children were killed. But even more horrific is to see the conditions in which these women would walk into and just the blindness that they had to have to be in, and that place of despair, really, to go through is going to a place like that to kill their child or go through any kind of medical procedure there. So yesterday we opened it up to the media. We had a fairly good showing of media. We had the Associated Press, a handful of news reporters, and we got fairly good coverage. I was on Yahoo, and I saw a picture of, sure enough, Troy Newman standing in front of the industrial-sized garbage disposal in which they used at some point to dispose of the children that they had just killed.
All right,
and so that was good exposure, I felt, for the clinic.
Yeah, that's right. You know, maybe you could take a swab of some place in the clinic, the floor or one of the walls, and then swab the ground in an alley and have them analyzed by a medical lab and find out which is filthier, more germs and bacteria. You might be able to prove that a legal abortion clinic in America is actually more filthy than a back alley.
That is a phenomenal idea. I think I might try to do that, as a matter of fact.
Yeah,
that is a great point.
Because one of the things we've been hearing from people who've gone in there is how disgusting, how filthy, and to put that face on the child-killing industry, that this is not about treating women with respect. This is about killing babies for money.
Absolutely, Bob. And that reminds me that even in their phone book ad, and we found a sticker in their reception area that indicated that they were an NAF-certified abortion clinic, which is the National Abortion Federation. And the sticker that they hold up there says that they meet all standards and criteria for the National Abortion Federation standards of clinical practice.
That is a fabulous point, that this is not just some lone abortion clinic. This is one that meets the NAF standards. Wow, that makes that swab all the more valuable.
That's right. That's right.
And
so, go ahead.
I'm wondering, now, I've spent some time in Kansas. We've been to Wichita there at protesting at the abortion clinics. There used to be two in Wichita. Now there's one, George Tiller's. But hunting is real popular in Kansas. I guess they still hunt there, right, in Kansas?
Yeah, I believe so.
And wherever there's hunters, they're taxidermists. We were wondering about those cockroaches. Maybe bring one of those to a taxidermist and just make sure they stay around in the museum.
And preserve it and to show the, yeah.
Yeah,
the
actual cockroaches that were alive while the abortionist was plying his trade.
Yeah, that's another great idea. And part of the reason we opened the clinic up to the public was just because, you know, we can take pictures and video of what the clinic looked like, but we really wanted people to experience it for themselves.
Wow.
And it's incredibly powerful. I was careful. I was standing outside the clinic, or the mill, while the media was coming out one by one after they had gone through with their TV cameras and taking pictures with a tour with Troy Newman. And I noticed on their faces, every one of their faces was very long, very disgusted, very troubled after they'd been in there. And that's, you really can't go in there and feel anything but that way.
And because that clinic had been there for a long time, and these media outlets had been proud of that abortion clinic, defending them. This is one of the outposts of respect and dignity for women in Wichita.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And it shows the hypocrisy. One thing we've learned in the past few days since we've talked is that this is actually a historical site, and we intend to plant a marker in the ground just in front of this place. It was the site of 81 pastors or clergy members.
Mm-hmm.
It was the site of the largest act of civil disobedience by clergymen in the history of our country. And so then 15 years later, we closed it down. So,
you know, I do remember that pastor's protest there. I mentioned recently with you on the show that my sons and I were there. My mother, of all people, was in Wichita with us. And, of course, thousands of Christians went to Wichita for the Summer of Mercy and had for months, a couple months, virtually closed down the abortion industry. Do you recall how many arrests there were, Keith?
It was in the thousands. There were thousands of people here.
Yeah.
And they couldn't contain the amount of pro-life Christians that they were arresting in
yeah.
the jails. They had to open up the training facility
and
to arrest these people.
I think Christian activists probably have different ideas about what stopped that, but let me give you mine. Here's how I recollect how that event stopped, because you went from thousands of Christians being arrested in peaceful, nonviolent, civil disobedience, which is biblical, the Hall of Faith in the book of Hebrews, half of the people listed in the Hall of Faith disobeyed the governing authorities. They disobeyed the governing authorities, and God appreciated their obedience so much, their obedience to Him, that they ended up in the Hall of Faith. But anyway, here's what I recall, that there were extraordinary rescues in Wichita where Christians were kneeling and praying at the abortion clinic, and they would not leave when the police said leave. They'd say, no, children are going to be killed here. We're here to rescue those children. The police would haul people off and arrest them. And then there was a huge rally plan. There's an outdoor sports stadium there, and that stadium had, I think, maybe 14,000 people and speakers from all the national leaders spoke at that rally. And at that rally, if my recollection is right, that's what, 15 years ago? There was not a single call to continue to rescue another day. The rally was all about all our different organizations, all our newsletters, all our programs, all our speeches, and the very thing that brought all the national leaders there was ignored, where if only our Christian leaders would have said, if you're willing to put your life on the line to save these babies, if you'll make a pledge to rescue again or three more times or five times in the next 3 months or by Christmas, come on down out of the bleachers, come into the field, I believe 10,000 people would have went down on that field because everybody was there and ready. But that rally was the end of the rescues in Wichita.
That's incredible.
Yeah, that's my recollection.
That's so tragic. I've spoken to many pro-life leaders around the country, and they all point back to that time in Wichita in which Operation Rescue really lost momentum, and the rescue movement in general lost momentum. And it could be your theory is right, and it was the lack of leadership from the main Christian leaders.
Well, it was, you know, Operation Rescue was like they talk about a grassroots movement. That was Operation Rescue, because the leaders of Operation Rescue, no one had ever heard of them. They were just Christians who were devastated by child killing and were going to try to do whatever they could peacefully to stop child killing. And it became one of the greatest movements in the history of this country. I think the civil rights movement had a total of 10,000 arrests and civil disobedience in 10 years, Well, Operation Rescue had somewhere near 40,000 arrests in a period of about 4 years.
That's right.
So Operation Rescue dwarfed the civil rights movement as far as activism, protest, and peaceful civil unrest. Dwarfed it, but the media, while they promoted the civil rights movement, they did everything they could to make the pro-life movement look extremist, fringe, so that even Christian churches would condemn Operation Rescue. And so when it was run by people from the ground up who said, we're putting our bodies on the line to try to stop child killing, then the battle, they lost control of the battle, and it shifted into the operational organizational mode and the fundraising mode and the mailing list mode. So it was very, very discouraging for so many in the battle back then.
I know. And it's discouraging even to talk about it now. And points to the very reason that my wife and I and that Troy Newman and Cheryl Sellinger and so many moved from California to Wichita, Kansas, was to reignite that flame that was out here and to do what we can to shut down George Tiller's abortion facility.
Yeah, now we only have
the largest late-term abortion facility in the Western Hemisphere.
We only have a few more minutes, but let's talk about that. Now, your wife, Jennifer, is from California, and you guys married and have a beautiful family, Keith.
Thank you.
We're very proud of you guys. And so you've relocated to work with Troy Newman there in Wichita with Operation Rescue, and you're very focused on doing everything you can to make it difficult to kill babies in Wichita. And of the two abortion clinics that divided your attention, now one is closed down.
That's right. So we have more time, not that we had that much before, but now we have more time to focus on doing what we can to put George Tiller out of business.
And tell us about that abortion clinic. You said it's the largest late-term abortion clinic in the Western Hemisphere.
It is, and it's tragic, as we've had people from around the country come in and visit this closed abortion mill. I was able to tell them some of the stories of these women on Tuesday mornings. Is the worst time for me to go down to George Tiller's facility, because that's when women from around the country and even Canada and different parts of South America come in, and that you can visibly see them pregnant 8-9 months along. And you know that's the day that they're going in to inject their child's heart with digoxin.
That's just devastating.
And it is devastating, and that's why he has to be shut down.
George Tiller, he has an incinerator right there on the premises.
It does.
And the pro-lifers for years have not only seen the women go in to kill their babies, but they've smelled the smoke of those little bodies being burned.
And I personally have witnessed large ash coming down when the incinerator's on.
Right, exactly.
Smoke.
Yeah,
it's terrible.
It's not different from being outside of Auschwitz or Dachau when they would kill the Jews and then incinerate them.
That's right.
It's not different. Just the victims here are younger than the average victim of the German Holocaust. But now, on our website, kgov.com, we have a gallery. And in that gallery, we have one of the most bizarre, devastating things you've ever seen. George Tiller offers a memorial service in his abortuary where he performs his late-term abortions. And a mom had an abortion there. She had her baby killed, and then she went through the memorial, wrapping up the dead baby in a beautiful little blanket with a rose. And this mom then had, and the dad is there like he's nuzzling his little baby, only the baby's dead. So the mom and dad are having this go away farewell memorial to their baby with the flower, the rose. And then the mom apparently had this tragic change of heart, and they take pictures of the memorial, and she gave the pictures and a handwritten letter to the pro-lifers there, the Christians, and we have those photographs on KGov.com in our gallery, and the handwritten note of the mother who killed her baby.
I know, and we appreciate that that's on your site, and I encourage people to look at that. It is tragic, and the more information, the more you learn about George Tiller, the sicker you feel. It goes deeper than that, and he's even said to sidewalk counselors in front of his mill that this is one of his ministries. This is his ministry. And he's a member of good standing at a Lutheran church, a local Lutheran church.
Yeah.
And claims to be an evangelical Christian.
Now, the letter, the handwritten note to the pro-lifer, it's from the mom. And I'll leave out the names except for the baby little girl's name was Tess. She wrote, "Thank you for listening. Here are the pictures of Tess. I feel so bad for the smiles on my face in some of the photos. I was in shock. By no means am I happy. To me, Tess was beautiful because she was my daughter. I left the somewhat naked photos out because they are pretty graphic, and I'm also ashamed of letting someone make those horrible marks on her body. What kind of mother am I? I let that butcher slash her up because I was supposed to protect her. Now all I do is miss her. Thank you," and then the mom's name.
Yeah.
And with that handwritten letter is a description and the photographs of the mother with her little baby girl Tess and the father that they paid a couple thousand dollars for the baby to be killed.
It's tragic, and the facade and the lie that says he's doing this to help women. Well, I've seen videos where he's saying that very thing, and it's just ridiculous. It's inane. Anybody who believes that is inane, and the $10,000 he receives per abortion is very much proof of that.
$10,000. Keith Mason, thank you so very much for joining us.
Thanks, Bob. God bless.
God bless you. That's Keith Mason with Operation Rescue. And we're out of time here. Check out our website, kgov.com, and especially the gallery at kgov.com.